This is The Reason Podcast, and I'm your host, Nick Gillespie. Please subscribe to us at Apple, Google, SoundCloud, Reason, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts on, and rate and review us while you're there. Psychedelic and hallucinogenic drugs are enjoying a revival lately, both as agents of pleasure and of medicine. The United States Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, recently designated psilocybin, the active ingredient in magic mushrooms, as a breakthrough therapy for treatment of depression. Depending on how swiftly things may move, psilocybin could be legal for therapy within 3 years. MDMA, the active ingredient in ecstasy, is getting a similar look as treatment for post-traumatic stress disorder. Earlier this year, two books about psychedelics came out. One was by journalist Michael Pollan and was called How to Change Your Mind. The other was written by today's guest, the poet and novelist Tao Lin. His book is called Trip, Psychedelics, Alienation, and Change. Tao Lin, thanks for talking to Reason.
Thanks for having me on your podcast.
So set the scene for writing Trip. You had just finished writing your novel, Taipei, which was, I guess you wrote it in 2012, was published in 2013, and which is itself filled with amazing amounts of drug taking, but of a very different sort than the type you're talking about in Trip. How did you come to write Trip?
In Taipei, my previous novel, I used a lot of pharmaceutical drugs like Xanax, Adderall, and various opiates and other benzodiazepines. And doing that for 3 years, I got really depressed and anxious to the point where I was scared that if I kept using it, I would feel just scary amounts of anxiety and depression and loneliness. So, and then at some point deep into that, I encountered Terrence McKenna, this guy who promotes psychedelics a lot. And I had just finished Taipei. And in Taipei, I talk about technology in the future as if it's an extremely bleak thing. And then I heard Terrence McKenna talking about it with optimism and hope in a really compelling way. And he got me interested in psychedelics because that's his, the main thing he promotes.
So McKenna was born in 46, died in 2000 from, a, I guess, brain tumor, right, or brain cancer. But he's kind of the mad apostle, or the, you know, the great apostle of magic mushrooms, as well as DMT and a couple of other things. What and you talk about it in the book, but how did you stumble across McKenna? And then what, you know, what is it about his life and work that really captivated you?
I encountered him through Joe Rogan, actually. I heard Joe Rogan talking about DMT, and I had been looking on YouTube for stuff about DMT because at some point a magazine had asked me if I wanted to smoke DMT and write about it. Mm-hmm. And that didn't go through. But since then, I'd heard a lot about DMT, so I was looking into it. And then Joe Rogan talked about DMT, and he referenced Terrence McKenna as after he smokes DMT, he encounters these things called self-transforming machine elves. And then I looked up Terrence McKenna, and the thing that excited me most about him at first was his idea called the end of history, which is that looking at the evolution of life, you can see that things get more complex over time and the process accelerates over time. There's microbes for billions of years, then suddenly there's animals for hundreds of millions of years, and then humans and so on. And he thinks this will lead to a singularity. And he thinks we're being pulled ahead from this singularity instead of being pushed behind, as the Big Bang Theory says. And that excited me because it gives meaning to the chaos at the end of history in the 20th and 21st century. It means this is all building towards something. And even though it seems violent, like a birth is violent, a birth leads to something else, just like the universe leads to something else.
Towards the beginning of a trip, you say that one of the reasons that you wrote the book is that it's a conscious effort by you not to drift towards meaningless depression, disempowering forms of resignation, and bleak ideologies like existentialism. That's a quote from early on. Why were you, you talk about how in Taipei, the characters and your fiction is largely autobiographical, correct?
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, the main character, Paul, is just on every page is taking, you know, one or more, Adderall, Ritalin, Klonopin, Xanax, you name it. Were you... Or is the character depressed because of the drugs that he is taking, or is he taking those drugs because he's depressed?
He's taking the drugs because he's depressed, and the drugs are making him more depressed.
So in Trip, I mean, through McKenna, he gives, talk, I guess, about the, you know, the category difference then between stuff like benzodiazepines or depressants and psychedelics. Is it the drug that is what's important, or is it the framework that you're kind of taking the drugs under?
It's both. And one thing that's different is that pharmaceutical drugs, they come in pills with like 10 other ingredients that are all toxic. And then with psychedelics, you can get them in mushrooms or plants, and they come with hundreds of other compounds in the form that humans and animals have evolved to use. Whereas with the pharmaceutical drugs, they've all just come into use after World War II. And by now, there's something like 16,000 pesticides, which aren't pharmaceutical drugs, but people are still ingesting them in food.
Mm-hmm.
So one difference is just one is way more toxic. But another difference is drugs like Xanax and other pharmaceutical drugs, they don't make me feel awe or wonder like cannabis, mushrooms, LSD do,
right,
consistently.
And what at one point you will quote McKenna saying that our map of the world is so wrong that where we have centered physics, we should actually place literature as the central metaphor that we want to work out from. Can you talk a bit about that and how that affects your writing and your attitude towards drugs?
Yeah, that quote appealed to me since I'm a writer. And I hadn't heard anyone say anything like that before.
Yeah.
And it also appealed to me because it views life and literature as different dimensional things of the same category. Like one's a higher dimensional thing than the other thing. And then Tenzin kind of also points out that Aboriginals view the imagination as a place, just like the universe is a place, except realer and larger. And viewing life and literature as dimensional things, you can use that as a metaphor to view life and the after-death state,
mm-hmm,
as one being a higher dimensional thing of the other thing, if that makes any sense.
I think it does, as somebody who enjoys literature and as a writer myself. But it's, you know, talk a bit about your relationship to drugs and how it's evolved over time. You were born in 1983, raised in Orlando, Florida. You know, how were drugs kind of viewed in the world in which you grew up? And, you know, how has that changed for you?
In elementary and middle and high school, I only heard about drugs through things like the DARE program and commercials that they would do on TV. And sometimes a police officer would come in and speak to us about it. And I also heard about drugs through punk music. And the bands I listened to seemed to view drugs differently than I'd heard in school and on TV, because they would joke about crack and heroin. On TV, it would always seem like an extremely serious thing, where once you smoke crack, once you'd be homeless. But these punk bands talk about it differently. But I still wasn't that interested in drugs, and I never used any drugs. And I did keep thinking of drugs as a category of bad things until after college at some point.
Right, because even in Taipei, in Trip, you mentioned that the drugs that you were taking during writing Taipei and whatnot, that the drugs made your life more vibrant and exciting, but also bleaker, emptier, scarier, and more troubling. So, I mean, on a certain level, maybe the DARE, I can't believe I'm saying this, but maybe the DARE people were onto something, that certain types of drugs actually are not good.
Yeah, like thinking of it that way, that they're talking about pharmaceutical drugs.
Right. So
you could probably like redo it a little bit and make it be for those kind of drugs, and then that'll be good.
Is there a generational shift of, towards as. It's become clear over the past couple of years that psychedelics are being taken more seriously, both by, older researchers. So people like Rick Doblin and the people at MAPS who have been working for decades now to get certain types of hallucinogenics or psychedelics into treatment plans and kind of succeeding. But it does seem that there's an interest among younger people in psychedelics. Do you think that's true, or is it still pretty much a kind of boutique, small movement among people that it's not particularly driven by age or anything like that?
I feel like I wouldn't know because I don't see enough people, but I would guess that it's probably, actually I do see people because on my book tour, I saw people and I noticed that there were a lot of elders at my readings, which I was glad to see more than I had before.
So it's kind of something that's happening outside of kind of time then, because, one of the things I find interesting about your work is that it's both kind of deadpan, but it also paints a kind of world or an existence for your characters that seems, somewhat banal and aimless, which makes drugs appealing either to get through the day or to change things. But at the same time, it seems as if you're reaching across in different generations then to find the people who actually are capable of helping you transcend where you are at any given moment.
Yeah, I've become more interested in older people, listening to older people. And I feel like I've had a bias, just like I've had a bias against psychedelics. I've had one against Aboriginals and also elders, I feel like.
Yeah, well, I was going to ask, where does that come from? The, the bias against, or the earlier bias against either Aboriginal people or Native people or older people?
With Aboriginals, I feel like it comes from just, I don't know, what do you think?
I've never had a beef with older people so much or Native people. I guess part of it might be it's easy to write them off as out of touch or not really in tune with the place where the world is at any given moment, either because of a lack of education or just being out of it. I don't know. Does that make any sense to you? I mean, because you're the one who had the bias.
Yeah, I've never had a beef against them either, but I feel like I've absorbed the beef against them.
Go ahead.
With old people, part of it is just how much now the media focuses on young people.
In the concluding section of Trip, you meet up with Terrence McKenna's longtime collaborator, his ex-wife, the mother of his children, Kathleen Harrison, who also helped him develop and come up with ideas. She's done a lot of stuff with Salvia and whatnot. What were you seeking out in meeting her? And talk a little bit about that experience.
Kathleen Harrison was Terrence McKenna's ex-wife, and together they had two kids, and also started a nonprofit organization called Botanical Dimensions that she still runs. And at some point while writing this book, before writing this book, I had been watching her talks on YouTube and reading her essays. And then at some point I noticed that she was teaching a plant drawing class on my 33rd birthday. And that was while I was writing this book. And prior to that, I had already discussed with my editor possibly visiting her. So all that combined to me going to California for a week and meeting her and her son, Ben, and her daughter, Kui.
Did that meet your expectations, or what were your expectations? And, you know, did you get something out of that?
I got a lot out of it. I didn't have expectations because I was so surprised that I was doing something like this. Because I had never bought a plane ticket and done something. I had only gone places for book tours and other things. And just my interest in psychedelics and nature, I was surprised at how interested I was that I was excited to go to a plant drawing class. Because with Taipei and before, I had subscribed to existentialism. And in existentialism, it says nature is mute. And now I was interested in worldviews that were placing nature at the center of everything. And then I took the plant drawing class, and then Kathleen showed me her and her son's garden, which I liked a lot. And I wrote about that in the book.
What was what drew you to existentialism originally?
Partly it was a reaction against Christianity, which is what everyone around me was subscribing to growing up. Because that's said to get meaning from the Bible, whereas existentialism says I can get meaning, make my own meaning. And also just existentialism seems cool. Everyone seems to like it. And that didn't work out with me. I wouldn't blame existentialism for everything, but that didn't help. It didn't tell me to look outward for meaning.
Well, the subtitle of Trip is Psychedelics, Alienation, and Change. So, I mean, the alienation, existentialism helped either further, perhaps help define your alienation. Would that be an accurate statement?
And gave it a good reason that the universe is indifferent, so I should make my own meaning. That makes sense to someone who hasn't heard about nature, I feel like.
So how does nature, and I guess if you want to bring McKenna back into this, how do psychedelics for you then make sense of, or help you make sense of a universe that is caring and ordered, or you know, what is the shift there that's so important?
It helps me make sense of a world that is different than I ever thought it was before, and that I'll be able to accurately apprehend. Because psychedelics, before I ever took mushrooms, I had never anticipated the state of being on mushrooms, and it was startling. And now that I think of the universe in terms of the end of history, thinking of history as a transformation, when I use psychedelics, I feel like I'm anticipating that transformation because it's a shift that I hadn't anticipated before. So that's partly, I forgot the question, but partly my answer.
What is your, if I may, what is your daily drug routine? Because, you know, one of the things that is kind of different about stuff like, you know, say Xanax or whatever, and, you know, LSD or something, is that one you might take every day, the other typically not, although you can. But, you know, what is, you know, what I think one of the things that's particularly bracing about Trip is the way that you explain not only how you got into this stuff, but then, you know, actually what you're doing. I was on a certain level, it reminded me of the autobiography of Ben Franklin in terms of talking about, you know, how you actually go about, you know, doing drugs and things like that. But what is it, what's a typical day like for you? And, you know, in terms of drug use?
Lately, I've just been using cannabis and tobacco, and I've been smoking both of them. And I'll start smoking like 2.5 hours after waking. And then for a while I did, in the middle of the day, I didn't smoke for 5 hours. And then at night I started smoking again. And I used to drink caffeine a lot, and I just weaned myself off it over like 2 months, and I haven't had caffeine in 2 months.
So what is the so the change that is mentioned in your subtitle then? I mean, it has to do with the types of drugs you're taking, how you're taking them. How has it affected your writing or your interest in writing? I guess, you know, another way of asking this is to say, you know, what are you working on next? And is it a major departure from your previous work?
It is a major departure in terms of Taipei, but it's on the same track as Trip. It's a novel, and it's called Leave Society. And it covers sort of the same time period, but longer. And in Trip, I talked about psychedelics mostly in terms of factors in my recovery. And in this novel, I'll talk about nutrition and environmental toxins and other topics that I didn't talk about on Trip. Mm-hmm. And also societal problems like 9/11 and vaccines.
What do you mean by society becomes like 9/11?
I was saying that was a societal problem.
Mm-hmm.
9/11, because while writing the book, I encountered this woman named Judy Wood, and she had this compelling theory about 9/11 that I hadn't heard before. And it doesn't bode well for people in society. Throughout the book, I talk about reasons to leave society.
And I mean, are you a hermit now then, or your characters tend to be kind of disconnected even when they're in the same room together. But is society a good thing or a bad thing, or is it that it has to transform before you would kind of reinsert yourself in it?
I think going in and out of society is good. And I feel like I've only always been inside of society, deep inside of society. And now I'm trying to get outside to get some perspective and write about it from the edge, because there's things that you can't see from inside society.
When are we likely to see your next novel?
Probably in... I finished a draft and I've been working on it, and I'm planning to finish it next year, and maybe it'll come out in 2020.
Okay. Well, I have one final question for you. So, looking back at some of your notices or your reviews, but Bret Easton Ellis at one point essentially said you were the defining writer of your generation. Do you agree with that? And if so, What does that mean, and what does it feel like?
I don't agree. I mean, I agree that's what he thinks, but I don't think of that myself that way. He also said I was boring. He didn't like Taipei in terms of excitement, which I can also agree with. A lot of people find it boring. But now my new writing is totally different. Mm-hmm. So maybe he'll be interested in that.
Or he'll be uninterested, right? Because you're actually engaging in a different way. Who are your literary influences?
Writers like Joy Williams, Laurie Moore, Lydia Davis, and Fernando Pessoa. These are all my influences with up to Taipei, and then since then I've been reading mostly nonfiction.
Mm-hmm. What did you pull out of your kind of literary predecessors? Is it an inspiration, or is it or is it more emulation on your part?
Emulation and inspiration. And with these writers I just mentioned, like Laurie Moore and Joy Williams, they wrote mostly short stories.
Mm-hmm.
And I got really good at concision through studying their work, I think. And also having a dense tone at all times.
Do you feel as if, has the essential, and I guess this is kind of going back to McKenna and putting kind of literature or writing at the center of things. Do you feel that the kind of cultural work of the novel or of the short story, for that matter, has that changed over time? And are we, it seems the types of novels that get written are distinct from, the kind of big post-war. I'm thinking of people say, the paradigmatic post-World War II writers like Norman Mailer or Saul Bellow or Philip Roth. Literature seems to be going in a different direction. Is your work mostly personal, or is it more kind of trying to apprehend and comprehend what's going on in larger society?
It was personal, strictly personal up to Taipei, but since then it's still the same amount of personal, but what's going on in society is intertwined with that so much that that I also focus as much on that.
Are you hopeful about the future? I mean, because you're talking about us reaching entering into a positive singularity, or what McKenna might call an archaic revolution. Are you hopeful looking towards the future, or are you filled with dread or foreboding?
I am hopeful about the future because this theory makes the most sense to me out of anyone I've heard so far. And also because I'm deliberately trying to be hopeful all the time now, just to get away from what I was before with existentialism.
Do you...
But also filled with dread a lot of the time, probably daily. And I'm always trying to resist that. So I'm filled with both, I guess.
So you're kind of an existentialist figure out. I mean, you're back to being Sisyphus, right? But maybe not Camus' Sisyphus. So you every day you're kind of pushing a boulder up a hill, but you seem to be in a better place than you were when you were an actual existentialist.
Yeah, I'm pushing a boulder up and down, but the entire mountain's going somewhere, and I can enjoy the pushing also.
All right, well, we will leave it there. I want to thank Tao Lin. He's a poet and novelist whose latest book, Trip, is subtitled Psychedelics, Alienation, and Change. Thank you so much for talking to the Reason Podcast.
Thanks for having me on.
Right. This has been the Reason Podcast. I've been your host, Nick Gillespie. Please subscribe to us at Apple, at Google, at Reason, at Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts, and rate and review us while you're there. Thanks for listening.